We're in Hebrews chapter 12 this morning, and I'm afraid we won't get too far through the chapter. There's some really good stuff here. The pastor who wrote this letter to his Hebrew friends now has brought us to a powerful conclusion. We've been through some hard parts, some that are difficult. This part's not difficult, not difficult to understand. It may be difficult to apply. The conclusion really began in the latter part of chapter 10. You'll remember that it says basically, because of who Jesus is and what he has done, then we should live like. And he begins to fill in the blanks. We noted a couple of weeks ago the formula in part of chapter 10 about midway. There's since, and then let us. And you follow those words, you'll unlock the code there in the latter part of chapter 10. Since Jesus has opened the way to the throne for us, and since he is the great high priest interceding for us, then let us draw near to God. Let us hold firmly, hold fast to the truth. Let us spur one another on. And then the author laid out that beautiful summary in chapter 11, this list of heroes of the faith that Tim presented so well last week. He built this image of a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us. Those stories are meant to inform us and to encourage us. And Tim asked us last week, what is your story? Are you building a story of faith that people will remember? And then chapter 12 begins with this sweet, powerful, challenging words that are the result of everything he's set out to prove in this letter. He's built this image of the great cloud of witnesses surrounding us. As we run a long, hard race. Can you picture that Greco-Roman Colosseum built out of stone? Those stone bleachers surrounding the field where at least the finish line of the race is. Who do you see up there on those stone bleachers? Do you see Noah? Abraham? Moses? King David? Rahab's up there. How about Deborah? Gideon? Are there heroes from your life in those stands? People that you've known that have gone on to glory and are now in that cloud of witnesses? I always picture my grandfather more there. Big, strong farmer. Hands that were capable of knocking you plumb into tomorrow. And apparently that happened a time or two. But I remember a gentle man of faith. And I think about some people who have gone before us here in this church. Delman Smith, Maxine Poindexter, Jerry Adams, and I shouldn't start naming any because there's so many. Heroes of the faith. We're operating amidst this cloud of witnesses, those who have gone before us and persevered in faith. They ran the race well and are there for us to remember as good examples. And I like to think they're cheering us on as we run the race. And brothers and sisters, it's a long, hard race, this Christian life. At least it looks long from this side. From the other side, I think it will look short. There are obstacles. There are hurdles in this race. It requires endurance. Are you training yourself for such a race? There's another faith leader. He stands at the finish line. He sets the standard for success. He judges our run. And he runs with us to teach us, to show us the way, and to encourage us. Have you ever run a race in which the judge is also your coach, your trainer, your co-runner, and your cheerleader? Let's read about in Hebrews chapter 12. We're just going to start off with the first three verses. Therefore, and you remember that word obviously points us back to what he's already said. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. We have some more of that since and then let us combination here. Since we're running in this cloud, this great cloud of witnesses, we need to run strong. How do we run strongly? How do we do that? Well, he lays out a very simple list here. First, he says, throw off the things that hinder you. The ESV says, take off every weight. You don't want to run with extra weight. What is hindering you? What is slowing down your faith? Are your time and energy being sapped by too many commitments? We tend to do that. We industrialized, get it done kind of people. We tend to load our boats too full. Are your friends leading you astray? Dragging you down? Maybe time to get some different friends. Are there good things keeping you from doing the best things? This is something that seems to plague my life. I got a little lecture about it last night, just to prepare me for this message. Sometimes our hobbies and our personal interests push out the best things of life. Sometimes even ministries or church involvement prevent us from doing what is best and necessary. Remember Jesus said to Martha when she was complaining that her sister was not helping with the chores, Martha, Martha, you're worried about so many things. But Mary has chosen what is best and it will not be taken from her. Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus, worshiping. What is it that in your brain, when your daydreams, you think, someday when I finish this, I'm going to serve the Lord like that? Do you have those thoughts? Man, someday when I get when I finish all this busy stuff, I'm really going to. I remember telling myself as a young man, boy, someday when I retire from this job, I'm going to go on a mission trip. You know, I'm going to go help somebody do something. Instead of taking a week of vacation and going, you know, I thought, someday. What are those things that are weighing you down, holding you back? And then we just carry around burdens we shouldn't be carrying around. You know, there are weights that we choose to carry that we should have put off a long time ago. Or we put them down, then we pick them back up. Because they just feel comfortable. You know, maybe they give us an excuse. Those wounds that we hold on to, we need to lay those burdens down. Put off the things that hinder you from being the disciple of Christ that you need to be. And then his second point is also very simple. He said, throw off the sin that is tripping you up. The sin that so easily entangles. You see, sin clings to us. It wraps itself around us and tries to pull us in deeper. Have you ever tried to run through a briar patch? You know, it's just grabbing you. Are you South Texas people? Everything has thorns on it, right? Or maybe you've been around a loose piece of barbed wire and it's just constantly trying to grab you. That's the way sin does. It wraps itself around. It tries to drag us down. The devil intends to trip us, to crush us with sin. Quit participating with the devil. Quit chasing after sin. Quit disobeying God. I'm sure you've heard it said that sin will always take us farther than we want to go and keep us there longer than we intend to stay. So get rid of it. Throw it off. What kind of sin is wrapping around your feet and keeping you from running a better race? Have you ever tripped over a rope or a cord and thought, I should move that out of the way? Well, do it. Get it out. Sin trips us up, holds us down, and keeps us from going where we should go. And let me ask you this. Do you need help taking off that burden or getting rid of the sin? Isn't that what we should be doing in church? Shouldn't we be helping each other do that? To take off those burdens, to get away from that sin? Just a couple of weeks ago, we read that we should spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Spur hurts a little bit, but it's not intended to do damage. It's intended to make us go, to go where we need to go. Get rid of the unnecessary things that are weighing us down. Throw off the sin that keeps on tangling up our spiritual feet. And then we can run with perseverance, with endurance. Now, we have several good cross-country runners in our church. There's a whole team of them right here. Plenty good. They go to the state competition year after year. They train for endurance, for perseverance. They push their bodies and their minds to be ready and to finish the race well. Of course, our writer is using the running and the race as metaphors for faith life. But are we training our minds and our souls and even our bodies for the long race of faith? Are we disciplining ourselves with meaningful Bible study and prayer and worship? Miss Adams has set up the table to display those things this morning. We've got Bible study and prayer and thankfulness. That's part of worship, right? Thankfulness. Thank you, Miss Adams, for cueing into the message. Are we learning to love each other well? Is our faith holding us up against the hurdles and that uphill battles with the wind in our face? William Barclay's comments caught my attention about the word that is translated perseverance or endurance. I'll butcher it in Greek, but just in case it matters to you, hupomone, right? We'll go with endurance or perseverance. It is defined as the capacity to hold out or bear up in the face of difficulty. And Barclay said in the original language, it carries the connotation of enduring to take charge. It's not an apathetic endurance, not just a sit back and hide till the storm's over kind of endurance, but the kind of endurance that takes charge of the effort. Kara Richardson over there is a soccer coach. Now, I don't know anything about soccer, but it looks like an endurance sport to me. I mean, running up and down the field, right? You need to be in good shape to play that game well, I would think. And I would think you don't want your athletes to just survive till the end of the game. You want them to be strong at the end of the game and in charge, their bodies and their minds in charge to win the game. Think about words like stamina, determination. These kind of qualities come from stubborn discipline. Stubborn's a good thing at the right time and in the right application. Stubborn discipline. And the people mentioned in chapter 11 had stubborn faith, grown out of perseverance. Now, verse 2, see, we've gone 15 minutes, haven't got past verse 1. It's good. Look at verse 2. It tells us about our goal, our target, the finish line. Make sure to fix your gaze on Jesus. He is the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. He's rightly described as pioneer because he has gone before us. He's cleared the path. He's marked the trail. He's faced the obstacles and the struggles that we face. He has negotiated all of the temptation that we might encounter. And he did so without sin. His pioneer work was mentioned in chapter 2, and we're told, do not lose sight of the finish line. We need to know what's at the finish line because we need to know where we're going and why we're going there, right? We need to know something about our destination, and Jesus is our target. We want to live for him, and we want to live as much like him as we can muster. He has set the example. He's blazed the trail for us to follow. And that's really what the New Testament is about. It tells the story of how Jesus lived, what he taught, how he died, and then how we are to respond to him. He is the perfect example. And so we need to focus on him. He has run the race before us, and we should follow his pattern. My middle brother was a Border Patrol agent, and he was a little bit older than most of the recruits when he was in rookie school and somewhere on the East Coast. And he said he didn't take to the physical training as well as some of the younger lads. And his coach was always on his back and threatened to kick him out daily. And he said somewhere along the end, well, you know, when it was one of those do or die days, he said, I led the run. He said, I led the run. And the coach trainer asked me, what got into you today? He said, I don't think you'd understand if I told you. He said, but I literally looked up and saw Jesus at the front of the race. And I fixed my eyes on Jesus. That's how we need to run this endurance race of life. Consider how Jesus ran. He endured opposition. It was not just opposition from the people you would expect. He was opposed by his own people. He was opposed by the religious leaders. They're the ones that had him killed. The very people who should have been helping others follow Jesus had him killed. And it says he endured it with joy. Did we read that correctly? For joy, he endured the cross. You see, Jesus could see what was beyond the cross. He knew what was on the other side of the cross. He could see people like us coming to faith and experiencing salvation in him and experiencing kingdom life. Jesus was so convinced about his mission and that it was right that the shame of the cross meant nothing to him. It was unimportant because he was doing the will of his Father wholeheartedly. His example is wholehearted obedience. He stubbornly endured the discipline that was meant for us. He took on the discipline that was meant for us. He died for us so that we can have joy. Discipline brings joy when we're trained by it. And now Jesus is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. It is the seat of authority. It's the seat of loyalty, I've lost the word. Where kings are, right? What do you call that? You don't know either. Okay. The seat of authority, the seat of a judge. Keep on thinking about Jesus' example. Continue to pray for the endurance to follow him and not become weak. You remember we read, we're not the kind of people who shrink back. Isn't that a good one? That's not us. That's not our kind of people. We're followers of Jesus. Let's read a little more and we'll wrap this up, starting in verse 4. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And you have completely forgotten this word of, have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, my son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the one he loves and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. Look at verse 11. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. There are hurdles and obstacles in this race. In this life, there are hard things. And God puts some of them there to train us. Now listen to me carefully. Some of those obstacles God puts there to train us. There are others that we develop on our own, or someone else has built them. Someone maybe years ago. There are different kinds of obstacles. And even if God hasn't designed them, he will work in them for those who love him to bring us to completion, to help us have faith, to discipline our faith and build it. How else will we share in the holiness of the Lord, the righteousness that he wants us to have? Now, I do not promote that you have to have a life verse. I mean, you can if you want to. That's good. I find that there's too many good ones to choose one. But verse 11 comes close for me. It helps me spur myself on toward love and good deeds. And I memorized it a long time ago in a different translation, but it helps me adjust my mind to see struggles as opportunities to grow faith. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet afterwards, to those who have been trained by it, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. That's how we want to be described, isn't it? People who have run well, who have peace in the storms, who can face the obstacles with faith, endurance, perseverance, and run well as we fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. So let us train ourselves to run with perseverance in this life of faith, and let us finish well. And here's my assignment for the rest of for today. Read the rest of the chapter. In fact, it wouldn't hurt to start back at verse 1 and read chapter 12. It's good. Only one more chapter left in Hebrews, and we'll try to hit the high points of that next week. Music team, would you come, please?